This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Judge Neil Gorsuch faced hours of questioning, some amicable, some challenging, in day two of his Supreme Court confirmation hearings today. Gorsuch was asked repeatedly about his views on everything from abortion to waterboarding to dark money in politics. Now, the testimony really gets to the heart of what is at stake in these hearings for Congress, for the court, for the White House, and of course, for the country. So let's start by listening to some of the key exchanges in today's hearing, and then we'll follow up with some analysis from a legal scholar. First, Senator Chuck Grassley, Iowa Republican and chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, he set the tone in today's hearings early on the question of Gorsuch's judicial independence.
It's odd that some of the same folks who will claim that you're not independent from the president will turn around and try to extract from you promises and commitments before they pass judgment on your nomination. The irony, of course, is that extracting commitments during the confirmation process is exactly what would undermine your independence as a judge. One way that they'll do this is asking you about precedent. So let's talk about that.
So Grassley asked about the precedents set in some of the highest profile Supreme Court cases, including D.C. versus Heller, that one about the Second Amendment, Citizens United on campaign finance, Bush v. Gore in the 2000 presidential election, and Roe versus Wade on abortion. Grassley asked Gorsuch, how would he have ruled?
Senator, again, I would tell you that Roe versus Wade, decided in 1973, is a precedent in the United States Supreme Court. It has been reaffirmed. The reliance interest considerations are important there. And all of the other factors that go into analyzing precedent have to be considered.
In fact, Gorsuch declined to state his specific views and instead cited the importance of established precedent in all of the cases he was asked about throughout the day. Now, as a reminder, Gorsuch was confirmed to the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals in 2006. The year before, he served in the Department of Justice under George W. Bush as Deputy Associate Attorney General. California Senator Dianne Feinstein, a Democrat, asked Gorsuch about his work on the 2005 Detainee Treatment Act, which set military interrogation standards. Feinstein today quoted an email Gorsuch sent to the administration where he urged President Bush to add a signing statement that would claim a right to bypass the act's ban on torture. So Feinstein asked,
and doesn't it mean that when you wrote this in email, you were condoning waterboarding as lawful?
Senator, I'd want to see the email again. I don't feel comfortable commenting on documents that aren't in front of me.
A little later, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham brought up waterboarding again, this time in the context of Gorsuch's views on President Donald Trump.
But you have said several times that he is not above the law as president. Is that correct?
Yes, Senator.
You told Senator Leahy if there was a law passed that a Muslim could not serve in the military, you believe, based on current law, that would be an illegal act.
Senator, yes, I see that having all sorts of constitutional problems under current law.
So if we have laws on the book that prevent waterboarding, do you agree with me that the Detainee Treatment Act prevents waterboarding?
Yes, Senator, that's my recollection of it. Firmly.
So in case President Trump is watching, which it may very well be, one, you did a good job picking Judge Gorsuch. Number two, here's the bad part. If you start waterboarding people, you may get impeached. Is that a fair summary?
Senator, the impeachment power belongs to this body.
Okay, that's even better. Would he be subject to prosecution?
Senator, I'm not going to speculate.
But he's not above the law.
No man is above the law.
Well, Democratic senators especially tried again and again to get Judge Gorsuch to articulate his specific views on sensitive legal questions, such as in this exchange with Senator Patrick Leahy, Democrat of Vermont, who pressed Gorsuch on the president's executive orders on immigration.
Now, does the First Amendment allow the use of a religious litmus test for entry into the United States?
Senator, that's an issue that's currently being litigated actively, as you know.
Well, I'm not asking about the litigation in the Ninth Circuit or anything else. I'm asking about the fact, is a blanket religious test, is that consistent with the First Amendment?
Senator, we have a free exercise clause that protects the free exercise of religious liberties by all persons in this country.
Judge Gorsuch emphasized once more that he would not speak to the specifics of that case. So Senator Leahy tried again. He asked, could the president ban, say, all Jews from the U.S. or all people from Israel?
Well, Judge, let me ask you this. Do you agree with me that there should not be a religious test in the United States?
I need to know more specifics.
Well, let me give you an example. Should there be a religious test to serve in the military?
Oh, Senator, that would be inappropriate, yes. That's against the law. That's against the law.
So having established that, Senator Leahy came back again to the specifics of the president's executive order.
And a Republican congressman recently said the best thing the president could do for his Muslim ban is to make sure he has Gorsuch on the Supreme Court before the appeals get to that point.
Senator, a lot of people say a lot of silly things.
Oh, that sounds silly.
My grandfather...
That's more than silly. Let's say this congressman wants you on the court so they can uphold a Muslim ban.
Senator, he has no idea how I'd rule in that case.
But that question again of judicial independence, it ran through much of today's questioning. Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican from South Carolina, asked Gorsuch point blank about Donald Trump's promise that he'd, quote, appoint a justice who wants to overturn Roe v. Wade.
Had you ever met President Trump personally?
Not until my interview.
In that interview, did he ever ask you to overrule Roe v. Wade?
No, Senator.
What would he have done if he'd asked?
Senator, I would have walked out the door. It's not what judges do. Okay. They don't do it at that end of Pennsylvania Avenue, and they shouldn't do it at this end either, respectfully.
But the values that a justice brings to the nation's highest court, ideally, that's what these confirmation hearings are designed to illuminate, even if they haven't actually done anything of the sort for a couple of decades. So perhaps this was one of the most intriguing exchanges of the entire day. Rhode Island Democrat Senator Sheldon Whitehouse questioned Neil Gorsuch about dark money in politics and the Supreme Court's Citizens United ruling. Whitehouse asked Judge Gorsuch how his values would, quote, fit into this. Here's how Gorsuch answered.
Our founders were brilliant. They didn't give me all the power. I don't wear a crown, I wear a robe. They didn't give you all the power.
When it
they
comes
divided
to
it.
The determination to state what the law is, particularly in constitutional matters, they actually did give the Supreme Court the power. And that's why it's important to us to ask these questions now before you go on to the Supreme Court and we have no accountability left. And so the values that you bring to that in those areas where you're not just implementing Congress's will, but are bringing your own values to the constitutional document that we treasure, that is why I think these questions are important.
Those are some highlights of the some 10 hours of questioning in day two of the confirmation hearings of Judge Neil Gorsuch. Well, joining us now to talk about what we saw and heard today is Paul Collins. He's a professor of legal studies and the director of legal studies at UMass Amherst, and he's authored two books about the Supreme Court, including Supreme Court Confirmation Hearings and Constitutional Change. Professor Collins, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
So based on what we just heard and what you've been paying attention to throughout the day, has Judge Gorsuch revealed anything of importance or anything that we didn't know about him until now?
Not that much. Gorsuch is doing an almost unprecedented job of not answering questions. So I think in terms of what we've learned that we didn't know, he seems to feel that President Trump isn't above the law, but frankly, I don't think that was surprising to many people.
Mm. Now, I mean, how unusual is this? In the previous segment, I more than hinted that it seems like the last several confirmation hearings have been exactly like this. We're now firmly in an era where nominees don't reveal anything at all.
So this one is different from what I've seen so far. So there is this sense that nominees do dodge questions, and they certainly do avoid answering questions on some particularly contentious issue areas. But Gorsuch is sort of approaching the hearing with this blanket ban on talking about really anything that would provide us a lot of insight into how he might adjudicate cases. That is unlike anything I've ever seen before.
Tell me more. Why is it unlike anything you've seen before?
Just as an example, so Gorsuch, as your clip indicated, refused to provide answers to his positions on District of Columbia versus Heller, the important Second Amendment case. Conversely, one-tenth of Justice Sotomayor's hearing involved Heller, and she took very firm positions on that case. Justice Kagan, about 5% of her hearing involved Heller and the Second Amendment, and she also took very, very firm positions supporting that case. Gorsuch seems to be getting a pass on actually taking positions on cases.
Well, what about the fact that Judge Gorsuch all day long has basically been saying he would honor precedent, that each of these cases were precedent-setting, and that in and of itself was the totality of his answer?
Yeah, so, I mean, that's kind of hard to read into because sometimes he's giving that answer and saying, you know, it's precedent and it needs to be respected. Other times he's basically just saying that case is a precedent and, you know, you're kind of left to figure out what that means.
I see. So I'm wondering if say you're a supporter of any one of these cases, or let's talk about Roe v. Wade here for a second, and you hear Judge Gorsuch say, "Well, that case is an established precedent. It was ruled by the court." How do you come away interpreting what he said? I mean, is he effectively saying that he would rule in favor of reproductive rights if a case came to the Supreme Court because of Roe v. Wade?
So it depends on how they answer the questions. Roe, actually, it's a great example because that is the single most frequent case that nominees refuse to provide an answer to. They generally don't take positions on Roe, and the typical explanation for why that is that it's so controversial and it's become such a focal point of the hearings, many of the hearings, that they try to avoid it. But there are a whole series of cases, and I would put District of Columbia versus Heller in this group, that we actually want nominees to take a position on, right? So we want a nominee to say that the Second Amendment affirms an individual right to keep and bear arms. We want a nominee to say that Griswold versus Connecticut established a constitutional right to privacy. And in fact, when nominees don't take those positions, they can actually get into trouble. And this is what happened to Robert Bork in 1987. He refused to take positions on many cases, or he took the wrong position on those cases, and he wasn't confirmed.
Well, yeah, and in fact, I mean, the Bork hearings are largely considered one of the turning points in American history in terms of how these judicial confirmation hearings go, right? I mean, so are you saying that Neil Gorsuch is in a way almost establishing a new precedent of his own about how little a potential justice to the Supreme Court can answer? And I mean, I don't see any indication that he is not going to get confirmed. It looks like he's got the votes.
I think that's exactly right. I actually think this was a strategy that was obviously orchestrated. Senator Grassley, the chair this morning, came out and he basically told Gorsuch that it was going to be okay to avoid taking positions on specific cases, including, you know, precedents that were decided 50 years ago. Gorsuch and Grassley, right at the beginning, basically articulated, this is going to be my position. When Democrats try to ask him questions on very particular cases, he goes back to that position. They're getting very frustrated. Senator Whitehead I was watching him.
Whitehouse, yeah.
Whitehouse, I'm sorry. I thought he was going to blow a gasket. So I think what's going on is that Gorsuch is doing fine in terms of, you know, how he's presenting himself at the hearing. He's obviously very, very capable. He's very, very smart. But he's not going to win a lot of sympathy from the Democratic Party by continuing to refuse to answer very basic questions on precedents that have existed for decades.
You know, I'm curious what you think about this because, as I just mentioned, it looks like Judge Gorsuch has the votes. I mean, I'm not seeing any surge from Republicans to stop this nomination. That's the likelihood of that is basically nil. And nevertheless, he's answering the questions in the way that he is. I mean, for us as a nation, what's at risk by not knowing what his genuine thoughts are on these key Supreme Court cases, as, you know, if he does indeed step up to the nation's highest court?
So this is our last moment of democratic accountability for a Supreme Court justice. We, as a public, get to listen to what these nominees have to say, and we can then contact our senators and tell them how to vote. And, you know, hopefully they'll respond. By refusing to provide even the most basic of a position on many of these cases, we're really missing this opportunity. So this is, in fact, the most theatrical confirmation hearing I can ever recall having seen, in the sense that very little information is coming out of this particular hearing. If you compare this to, say, the last two, Sotomayor and Kagan, we got all kinds of information from their hearings relative to what's going on now.
So how do we get past the political theater then? I mean, how should these hearings be run such that we can get actual substantive information on the jurisprudence of these justices or judges who will go on to be some of the most powerful people in the United States?
I think the Democrats on the Senate are not doing that great a job. If I was Senator Leahy or Senator Feinstein, for example, I would have absolutely addressed the issue that it is not okay to refuse to take positions on Supreme Court precedents that other nominees have actually been expected to take positions on. So Grassley sort of started the hearing out by giving this fake story about the Supreme Court confirmation hearings. His story is not supported by the data. This notion that nominees refuse to say anything of value is absolutely not supported by we studied 70 years of confirmation hearings. We looked at everything that was said at every confirmation hearing, and what Grassley said is false. And so he started out the hearing this way. The Democrats basically gave his version of reality a pass. And so there's not a lot we can do now unless tomorrow morning or this afternoon a senator says, hey, listen, we're going to expect you to take a position on some cases, just like Justice Sotomayor, Justice Kagan, Justice Roberts, Justice Alito were expected to do.
Well, Paul Collins is Director of Legal Studies at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. He's author of a number of books on the Supreme Court, including Supreme Court Confirmation Hearings and Constitutional Change. Professor Collins, thank you so very much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
We'll be back in a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.